Hello everybody, I'm Chris.
I'm Craig.
And I'm Jack.
Here we are with the GBS.
And the GBS. Alan, please, Dale and the John Bishop.
Oh dear, Daniel, is this the time to do my John Bishop is just Stan Boardman?
Go
with
on,
the
let's.
John Bishop is just Stan Boardman with a stroke.
Because the men, you see, they do this, but the women, they do that. And that's the difference between the men and the women, they do.
That's £5 million, please.
Why is he fucking famous?
I don't know.
Right, here we go.
So,
right.
GBH.
Why are we watching this? Someone
Why
tell me.
Why are we watching this, Chris?
It's
please
the,
explain.
It's the 25th anniversary, of,
nice.
The broadcast of Gibbich.
Yeah, GBH.
It's difficult to remember now that we don't make proper television anymore, just how big an impact a series like this had.
Yeah.
I don't, although at the same time, it's not like series like this came along all the time.
No.
True, yeah.
And certainly from my experience, my memory, I think it was this and Edge of Darkness were the two main focal points within that sort of period.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there's about a 5-year period of stuff that I think stayed quite of important to me, certainly. Mm-hmm. I think probably from all of us.
Mm-hmm. But there, it was the time of the sort of...
Michael Angelis has just turned up, which immediately makes it funny.
We do, don't. But yeah, you know, it's kind of the time of the serious message play or series, which were all fucking depressing.
Yeah, I mean, so 86 is when you've got She Devil,
Mary Fisher,
and you've got Edge of Darkness.
85.
So in 85, a lot of great ones kick off. Mm-hmm. You've also got, I remember from that period, Deadhead.
Jimmy fucking Mulville.
Which is, Jimmy Mulville. When I was younger, people thought I looked a bit like him.
Really?
Yeah.
You did look a bit like him,
yeah? Yeah, I still look a bit like him.
Yeah.
He's enormous hair. I've got hair like that.
Head,
I had forgotten he was in this.
Not a popular man, Jimmy Mulville.
He's apparently quite a difficult character, shall we say.
Quite a sharp character, I think you'd say.
Country
which
character?
I think
he's quite open about admitting, because he's a former... well, he's had alcohol problems and whatnot, which he's and drug problems, which I think he's beaten many years ago. But he's talked about that quite a lot. Yeah, he's quite a tricky chap.
But him and Rory McGrath had the big fallout the ownership of Talkback. Is it?
Oh, I'm Team Rory.
Yeah.
I once saw Rory McGrath walking down the street in Edinburgh, and the reason that I saw him was he'd done a massive burp, and I turned around and he was laughing. Instantly liked him for that.
Yeah. Now, let's put this into a bit of context. Mm-hmm. What, Craig, is the story of GBH?
It is the story of a man called several characters, the main one being Michael Murray, who is played by Robert Lindsay, who is the new Labour council leader in a northern city, honestly not Liverpool.
Mm-hmm.
He's nothing like Derek Hatton at all.
Yeah.
And at no point did anyone joke that the programme was GBH stood for Goodbye Hatton. He has a general strike of people in the city. The other character, Jim, played by Michael Palin, Jim Nelson, is the headmaster of a primary school, who, because some of the people who are supposed to be picketing get drunk and don't go on the picket, he goes into school, not having crossed the picket. But then Michael Murray, because this has given him bad publicity, and he...
Yep.
sort of retro-engineers it to look like he's a scab and basically hounds him.
Yeah.
Which kind of sets off all his kind of OCD and mental illnesses.
Well, for example, why is he hiding on the floor?
Because he's frightened of bridges.
Because he's frightened of bridges.
Now, as I understand it, GBH originally stood for Great British Holidays. It was all supposed to start off to be set in a camp. And Alan Bleasdale, the genius writer of it, if he'd never written anything else, it wouldn't have mattered.
Perhaps shouldn't have.
He has a fear of bridges.
Oh, okay.
Which is now, where that all came from.
This is all, I mean, in retrospect, it's quite difficult to talk about this because of everything that's happened so far. Because you've suddenly got these coppers and all this turning up and judges and shit.
Mm.
You have there are also one of the, some of the principal characters are the slightly creepy lefty historian and agitator, and his little sidekicks who are somehow connected with the Secret Services, but you're not sure why, and what's everybody's agenda. You also have Lindsay Duncan, and you and there's a whole suggestion, there's a whole thing about how there was, in Michael Murray, there's a little girl,
Eileen Critchley,
when she was, when they were kids, she dared him to hang her,
basically strangle her, she wanted to know what it would be like.
And now they've creepy back shadowy people have brought her in to convince Murray that that's her and it's fuck him up.
Yeah.
But you're not sure
it's
why.
It's a huge paranoid fantasy, But it's completely rooted in the politics of the time, which was... Well, by the time it was made, was just slightly post-Thatcher. In some ways, the politics are slightly out of date by the time it was made.
But they didn't seem that way at the time. Because they were very, very present. Yeah. It's difficult now to remember in a time when... when politics is... Everybody's cynical about politicians and everybody's, they're all the same and all that sort of thing. That... People still at that in 1991 strongly identified with ideologies and certain worldviews that tied to major political parties and elections and things, but in a way that just doesn't exist.
And tied communities.
Yeah, oh no, absolutely.
So we're watching this just to sort of basically get the right sort of nostalgia.
What do you mean?
Because we're watching it because it allows us to talk about politics, it allows us to talk about some of the tremendous... talents involved in it, but we are asking people to basically watch the final episode of a series.
But also, this is the best British drama of the 1990s, at the very least.
Or the very least,
at the very least, because I would say that's uncontestable. The only other drama of the 1990s that I think is anywhere near as good as Our Friends in the North, possibly.
I like Our Friends in the North a lot.
I think this is better.
This is better, yeah.
Our Friends in the North is more conventional.
Yeah.
This manages to tell a story about almost the same sort of people. But it's comedy and it's really quite fantastic at times.
But what this does is it stays quite true to the principles set down, which are the correct principles, by Troy Kennedy Martin. Which is that no drama should be entirely rooted in reality, because reality exists anyway. So if you don't use the conventions of fantasy, and fantasy in the sense of whether it's reintroducing characters that are dead or imagined or something, then you first of all you're not reflecting the way people actually think, because people have flashbacks and they think of people at random times and whatever. But they also it doesn't tell you anything that you can't experience anyway. So, for example, in the best drama of the 80s and possibly ever, Edge of Darkness, you know, Craven talks continuously to his dead daughter. People turn into fucking trees.
Well, that's how he wanted to end it, wasn't it? Craven turning into a tree.
You know, there are all sorts of
the
bizarre... there's all sorts of weird things that happen in Edge of Darkness, but there is absolutely no doubt that it's rooted in reality. This does, because of the weird backwards and forwards and is this Eileen Critchley or not and all that, it sort of does almost the same thing. Our Friends in the North is a straightforward drama.
It is straightforward.
Very, very fine drama.
It is very, it wanders a bit.
But you allow me to say that this, I think, is the, this GBH is the second greatest TV drama and the greatest one's Edge of Darkness.
Yeah, totally.
Well, I would agree with the top two. I'm not sure if I agree with the order.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it does. I think this is only, I mean, it's only slightly below Edge of Darkness because of the atmosphere of Edge of Darkness is better, is much darker, but because of Joe Don Baker.
Yeah,
Joe Don Baker.
Because as great as Michael, as great as Palin is in this, and he is great, and as great as Robert Lindsay and everybody else in it, and they are great. None of them are Darius Chedbuck.
No, it's a great character and a great performance.
But as Michael Pennant did say to me the other week, GBH,
my very good friend,
possibly slightly a little bit flabby. That's what he said.
And he said, you're really? Slightly different. He's not as nice as people say, is he? He's frankly fucking rude.
So just to give some context, I was at a public thing which Michael Penny was talking at.
It was a charity event in the hospital.
Yeah, so I put my hand up and asked a question. So I'm not claiming...
What was your question?
I'm not claiming any great friendships.
So what was your question?
My question was, Michael, it's 25th anniversary of GBH this year. Tell me a little of your memories of that. That was my question.
And he said...
So he said that originally... and I asked the question because I knew we were doing this. Because I hate asking questions of these things. As everybody does, apart from ourselves. So I thought, do you know what? I'll have to pretend to be an arsehole, Craig.
Yeah, that's the thing. That comes very, very hard
to you. Did you have to like run around the playground a few times to get your into character for it?
I always liked his house in this. Michael Palin's house.
Yeah. So basically what he said was...
Michelangelo's.
So he was originally a pro...
Sorry, can I just see if I could just look it on there? He is basically the proto-scouse there.
Oh, yeah, no, at all, absolutely.
He is the platonic ideal of a scouser.
Yep. Sorry, go on.
So he was originally approached to play Michael Murray, and Billy Connolly was down to play Jim Nelson.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh. Yeah. Hello! Oh, no! That's me crossing a picket line. Oh, my God.
What would my mammy say?
Oh, I forgot I was there.
Oh, don't go over that bridge. I'm going to do a wee jobby.
But I love bridges. Anyone who watches my programmes knows
absolutely.
I love the engineering.
Absolutely. Brilliant.
Oh,
anyway,
live a little.
So he was quite happy to play the part.
Here's my dreadful wife,
Jim Nelson.
I think.
He also said, I think backing up Chris's point earlier, that they don't make dramas like this anymore.
Yes.
Both in terms of the scale, but also the political content.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And letting the writer just write the fucking drama.
Well, now you just got those shit fucking Black Mirror.
But then he did say that he thought that perhaps it was a little bit flabby in parts. And I think the sequence that he's talking about is probably the holiday camp section.
Yeah, okay.
But it's so mental in it. It's just great fun. And Daniel Massey's great in it.
But it does feel like a bit of a... But slight the, meander away from the main storyline.
But you see... But SDI being driven here.
But I really don't mind that because... I think it presents really beautifully drawn contrasts between the different... Like, for example, in the epic Adelphi Hotel sequence, where...
This body leaves in 5 minutes.
Be on it. Where Michael Murray is actually going through a really severe personality crisis.
Yeah.
And his insane twitch, the arm
which
twitch...
Is pure Jack Douglas.
Yeah, is really going mad.
Yeah.
So... In certain other circumstances, it would be seen as sort of really pathological and really disturbing. Mm-hmm. You know, like if you could imagine a sort of fucking Blue Velvet kind of set up around it.
Aye.
Meanwhile, there's a fucking sci-fi conference going on.
Oh, that's right.
With the fucking... Farnicates. All fucking going on all around it.
Yeah.
And then there's the whole backstory with the... You know, the head waiter and the waiter, and it's like, you've got to take it up, oh, no, it's your turn, and all that. It's fucking brilliant. Yeah. Now, the really creepy characters are these bastards.
Yeah, these hard nuts.
The hard cases, who are just awful. Yeah. You know, the sort of.
One of the things
guns for hire type.
As a series that I think GBH does brilliantly is it starts off as quite a large scale thing, right? Mm. With the strike and all that. And then it just sort of manages to keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
And there's a point where you realise that there's a bigger conspiracy going on.
Sure.
And it coincides with the scene where the main exponents of that conspiracy get into a helicopter and take off. And as they take off, you realise the scale of the drama has just suddenly massively increased. It's just fucking brilliant.
Yeah, and the people who are running this sort of conspiracy, kind of, you know, the bigger scale... You get the sense that, again, that this is because, you know, they have the scene with the train where they go away on the train and then the Secret Service people are just up there. But they know they're there and they each know that they're there and they're all part of this game.
Yes. Yeah.
But this is only one piece on the board
because
they go to another one and another one. Nobody's left uncomplicated in this. Julie Walters, who got massive plaudits for this, quite rightly, who plays Michael Murray's the Irish mother.
I went to see. I went to see the world. I wanted to see. I saw the sea.
She, there's this whole backstory with her and Michael Murray's teacher.
That's right. He was in love with her.
Uh-huh.
And it was he kept quoting Prufrock, didn't he? That's
yeah.
It,
so there's all that going on. So
like I have done in the past. Okay. I should have been a pair of ragged claws scuttling across the shores of silent seas.
Anyway.
No, I am not Prince Hamlet, nor was meant to be. I am an attendant lord used to pad a scene or two. Something like that.
I see your poetry expertise is back up there. Yeah. Kept on from Christmas.
Oh, let us go then, you and I, when you can lie spirit against the sky like a patient etherized upon a table. And let us go through set and half deserted streets, the muttering retreats that lead us to a question of insidious intent. Oh, do not ask, what is it?
That's not
Let
any...
us go and make our visit.
They don't quite any of that in this, do they? That bit. I don't think.
What are we watching again?
Yeah. Oh, that was quite impressive.
It was.
It was off my head. Come on.
Oh, no.
And there's that guy. Yeah. He used to be an thingy.
He was
What's
in
it called? The programme. Goodness gracious
Goodness
me.
Goodness gracious me. He's also in Rita Sue and Bob too.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he's the boyfriend, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. The one that she goes off with at the end.
Yeah.
It's quite sweet.
Didn't GBH actually also start off life as a novel? I think he wrote about 500 pages as a novel and then decided it wasn't working, so turned it into a series.
Racial tension!
And it was very to Lambert as the exec producer. Wasn't
it was,
it?
Yeah.
She made this happen. I mean, that's...
So,
And didn't they spend like half a Channel 4's drama budget on
it? Yeah, they spent an immense amount on it, yeah. But frankly, it's not like...
Yeah, what did
it matter, you know? What else would they make?
Desmond's. So there you go. It's a lovely house, that, isn't it?
Mm.
A primary school head teacher couldn't own a house like that now.
Oh, no. Now, it's a special school, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
What we used to call special
Robbie
schools.
Burns!
Oh. Robbie Burns!
Who's she again?
I don't know. But she looks right for the part.
Yeah.
She's nicely cast.
It's brilliantly cast, this series, as well.
And Palin gets to do some excellent sort of silly messing about in front of the kids, which is really nice, because you know the kids.
Must have been great, yeah.
Because you see the kids who are, you know, like, you know, one thing or the other, some of them get Down syndrome, some of them are,
they're just
disabled in some way, are absolutely loving it, where they're just arsing about on the desk and all that, so it's lovely.
It's actually quite striking. This came out when I was about 20, and looking at him there, he must have only been about 3 or 4 years older than I am now, which is what happens after 25 years, I suppose.
Now, this turned Robert Lindsay into a massive star.
I suppose he'd been famous early in his career as Wolfie.
But he wasn't famous as an actor.
No.
He was, you know, he was... when this came on, it was like, that's Wolfie Smith.
That's true.
That's right. Can you... my first knowledge of GBH at all was... I don't know if you remember, when they... They screened the first episode and then they repeated it at the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
in between, they ran a trailer, which was just the press reviews. I knew nothing about it. And then I started seeing they cut in some of the action, clearly, but it's predominantly the press reviews. And I remember seeing the press reviews and thinking, Jesus, this looks absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
So my first
So were you still at school at that stage?
So 91. I can't remember if it was...
I was at university.
Yes.
I was just
I certainly hadn't gone to university, so... It must have been the first half of 91, and I think it was on. But I remember just thinking, "What the hell is this? This looks absolutely amazing."
Oh, I remember. Yeah, so 91. It was the year we took over the cafe that I mentioned in the TV movie, which is I only mentioned
what
because
TV movie?
Yeah, oh. I only mentioned it because it was. I was watching, you know, things slightly more mature things because I was 16 at the time. So you think, oh, I'll watch that. Because otherwise, you know, before that, you would just watch whatever your mum and dad were watching, and they wouldn't have been watching this because it would have been on Channel 4. Not that they're down there on Channel 4, but you just turn on BBC One or ITV and watch that.
Mm.
But the point is, so I watched this.
Empire's wife.
Yeah. Oh, you know who she is. I think I'm right. I've got my glasses on.
Not her, but the other one is British Empire's wife, isn't it?
Mr. British. Oh, no, that's right. No, I'm thinking of Carol at the desk. I love the British Empire.
That was good, yeah.
Mr. British. Oh, that was a fucking.
I want to come back to that car later.
No, I thought for a second that was Tina of Coronation Street. But it's not.
Yeah, she's like her, isn't she?
She's very like her. A few years after GBH, because you will recall. Oh, he does look like her. A few years after this. There was such massive demand for we want another GBH.
Yeah.
you know, so there had to be another big drama starring Robert Lindsay and all this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And a couple, I don't know how long it was, it wasn't that long, two, three, 4 years ago, later, there was a, now was it The Trouble with Jake?
No, it's called Jake's Progress.
Jake's Progress.
It's 1994.
Which was, 94, which yeah, was fucking terrible.
What was it?
It was about, it was Robert Lindsay and, I can't remember who played his missus.
And they had Julie Walters in it, isn't she?
Yeah.
And it's kind of, there's a lot of the Bleasdale Repertory yeah. company are in
there. Did he write it?
Yeah.
And it was a, there's a little boy who was no right.
Yeah.
And
just to say, this is very interesting stuff about dumping,
yeah,
pretending to be police. Fact, this all comes from Orgreave,
yeah, no, absolutely.
It, you know,
paramilitary,
all that sort yeah. of stuff. That there's hills,
all very fresh, and
there's everything
mind.
In this, you know what I mean? And it's done very lightly,
yeah. In fact, isn't it Julie Walters who plays his wife?
It may well be, but there's a single thing that I get, because in the little boy, you weren't sure whether it, like, he was like fucking demonic or something, mm-hmm. or he kept on doing things. He was a bit of a monster, mm-hmm. and there was, they were trying to deal with him, and the
play
only
me, daddy.
Was play with me,
play
daddy,
with me,
play
daddy.
With me.
Play with
that
me.
Was all you took away from it. Not now, quite in the same.
Has he written anything since this?
Yeah, he did. Then he did a thing called, was it called Oliver's Travels or something? Like
no,
that?
No. That was Alan Plater. Oliver's Travels with, it was Alan Plater wrote that.
Well, so he did.
Was that the crossword one?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Me too, but that's when I said to him, I'll come back to the car.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, he had
car.
The same
he
car.
He has a Volkswagen
that
estate.
That was a great season.
It's a great season. I've got that on DVD.
He did a adaptation of Melissa. Yeah, which was, it was like a kind of 1920s thing, I think, set on a ship. And it was an adaptation of a book, and he greatly expanded that, yeah. And it wasn't popular.
No.
Sorry, we're building up to what is the actual apotheosis yeah. of the whole series.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't quite happen at the end of the episode, because no. a lot of things have to be tied up. Yeah. The old boys stand sitting at the top of the old stalwarts of the Labour Club. Because right at the very start, the boy on the right with the longer hair, Michael Murray's goons come in and say, yeah. you know, we are taking over and whatever. And they give him a slapping around.
Yeah.
And they smash a picture.
That's a face from the time.
They smash a picture of him with Harold Wilson yeah. and all this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So that's the old Labour. And it's funny how in 1991,
exactly,
there was all old Labour, even though yeah. it was still yes. Connex Britain. Your
who,
man there.
Who
with
would
the,
Corbyn be on this?
Right, yeah. Your man with the wee bow tie and the hair there, he was consistently played rat face tabloid. Yeah. Either photographer or reporter.
Yeah.
In Defence of the Realm, I think he does.
No, that's Danny. What's his name?
No, I think he's in it somewhere as well as part of the press pack. I think he's also the, I'm sure, the tabloid scum that everybody hates in the epic Hold the Back Page.
Mm. Oh, brilliant, yeah. Great programme.
I am the poet laureate of sport, and give me £5, you ought. So this is where it builds up to, because all of the anger against these pricks getting their way and all that builds up to now.
Who are basically militant.
They're basically militant, yeah. Who are a bunch of pricks.
They are, yeah, absolutely. And they're
just bullies.
And they're friends. They're friends in the rape cult, the SWP.
Yeah.
Now,
so they're powerless, so they all sit there until fucking Bill Webster
yeah,
comes to sort them out.
Yeah, absolutely, that's what we need. Yeah. Get Bill Webster.
But they do it so well yeah. with a...
Yes.
Batter.
Boom. Yeah, fantastic.
Carry on, son.
Yeah, there's so much in this. Now, the...
So here are the...
Three Moorhead.
Here are the conspirators, the types.
Yeah,
I always
is.
Wonder who he's meant to be. And I have a terrible feeling he's meant to be like Eric Hobsbawm or somebody. I'm not sure if that's fair.
Was he meant to be a trot in this?
He's the sort of academic... Yeah, there yeah. are kind of trotty
yeah.
SWP type
yeah.
people. But he's like a sort of... I see you mean about the car.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a sort of academic... You know, he's the analyst, the thinker and all that. Mm-hmm. And his sidekick is the organiser yeah. type. Person.
Well, you know, Hobsbawm never left the Communist Party. He loved his
He
loved his old school. He defended Stalinism.
He's one Michael Murray.
So the considered view of, I think, Bleasdale, particularly with Jake's Progress, is that he was given too much power.
Yeah.
And what you didn't have was a good old-fashioned script editor basically saying, you need to cut all this shit out. And there is a sort of sense of that in GBH, I think, but he gets away with it. And the expansiveness of GBH works in his favour. Whereas by the time you get to Jake's Progress, it's just like...
Yeah, it's self-indulgent.
And each episode of Jake's Progress was basically as long as Gleestar wanted it to be. Mm. So they were different lengths.
It was a fucking mess. Now, this is interesting because this has got to the point where... It's almost he's already won because Lindsay's... Like Michael Murray's...
Yeah, he's basically...
He can't find a way out. He wants out and he's trapped by all of these forces around him. Yeah. He knows he's going to end up being the fall guy for it. Mm-hmm. Michael Palin, Nelson, he's got the upper hand, he's got the high ground, but he still has to overcome the goons.
Yeah, absolutely.
Outside.
And the fact that they have this conversation while he's having a piss is just fantastic. Mm.
Have they shared many scenes? By
I was going to say, I think this is the only time.
I think
it's the only time since the first episode.
Yeah, I think it might be.
Where he actually gets, you know, expelled and toughed out and all that, out of his job and all this sort of thing. And I love the wee speech.
So
we
fuck
get to
you, Michael Mann, in your heat. This is how it's done properly.
When he gets to this wee speech where he says, I hate violence. Uh-huh. I hate it so much it makes me want to be violent.
I think the other thing that's amazing about GBH, which you didn't see in Bleestar's previous stuff, was how well plotted it is. Because it's really an intricate plot. Mm. And this is very classical, isn't it? That you've got your two protagonists who are together in this little scene here. And it mirrors what happens in the first episode. And, you know, with things like Boys in the Black stuff, which is also fantastic, and Monocle Mutineer, I don't think they're as cleverly structured as this. And certainly nothing that he did afterwards was as cleverly structured.
I'll do it for you, you bastard. Yeah.
It's a beautifully shot scene, It's done in one shot, and there's mirrors all around them.
But I love that, the fact that Nelson gets to say, I was fucking good at my job.
Yeah.
And, of course, the other great scene, my other favourite scene in GBH, it's where they throw out William Gaunt.
Oh, aye, yeah.
At the start, when he's the director of education.
Oh,
and
yes.
And Murray puts in, if it's his brother-in-law or something, he can't even read or write. Aye. And he says, what is it? I can't remember. How many E's there are in my room. He says, there are two. And he says, there's three.
Yeah. Yes,
that's right.
And then he says, he packs up his stuff and says, what I'm going to go do now is I'm going to resign and I'm going to go home and tell my wife that we're putting our house on the market so we can live within our new circumstances. He just packs his bag and gets out.
Yeah, just walks out, another life ruined. It's when we used to have directors of education.
We were with our stuff.
Back when we were a proper country.
So what did we think of Bleasdale's earlier stuff? And...
Yeah, great, why not? Monocle Mutineer, Boys in the Black stuff.
Monocle Mutineer, I remember, I didn't watch it from the start.
Who was in that again?
Because we only started watching it when the actual controversy started over it.
Right.
And I know my mum and dad watched Boys from the Black stuff, but I just found it too depressing.
It's extremely
depressing. I've watched it since, but I still find
Tom McGann also sings the theme tune.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh Antonio, you've gone away. And I am on
good music hall song.
That was quite sweet, actually.
Beautiful. Yeah, lovely. Can I tell my Boys in Black stuff story?
Go on then.
So, one
is this,
of the.
Is this from a personal friendship with anyone involved?
What? No. Mike, this isn't. No, Michael didn't tell me this.
Mike?
So,
Mickey. The McDog.
The McDog.
So, there are a number of traumatic episodes in Boys in Black stuff. But there's one with Chrissy, and at the end, I think is it, and it's doubly traumatic for me because doesn't he keep geese or something like that, or he basically keeps geese or swans.
Is this story by any chance moving back towards Big Boy?
Well, that's but anyway, at the end of the episode, he has a breakdown. He can't get any work, and he slaughters his birds.
Yeah,
and you were thinking that's the way to do it.
It's really traumatic. So I remember watching that with my brother.
Was there a rapping at the window?
Not that brother, actually, the other brother. And it was really traumatic. So we'd sat there and we were both in sort of shock, having watched this horrific thing, okay? Mm-hmm. And my brother said to me, God, that was awful. And he said, shall I put the kettle on? I said, yeah, that'd be great, please. And he got up and his trousers fell down.
Oh, that's sweet. And then DM trousers fell down.
And they didn't slip down. They just went,
whoa. No, this is really horrible. Just drag you back to this for a second.
Yeah.
because it's the crowd then start chanting at Nelson that he's a scam. Mm-hmm. Mm. Now, which may not have much resonance to a lot of people, yeah. far too few people nowadays. Mm-hmm. But at the
We've
time,
done our best though. Yeah.
At the time, it's pretty much one of the worst things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. People.
And they're not letting him speak.
Guns, yeah. Which is quite bad too.
Actually, it's not as bad.
Correct use of the word refute as well.
Mm.
Tim Jorson?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fantastic.
I like him.
He's the sort of
Tom Jorson.
He's
the sort
right.
of control. Here we go. There's Bill.
Here they come.
Yeah.
This is what the whole series is building up to.
I've always liked him.
He's down up from the fucking Miners Club.
Yeah.
What was his character in
Bill Webster?
Yeah, of course. Yes, Kevin's dad. Yeah.
So here we go. Here we go.
This is it. This is brilliant.
Ready? One, two, three. Fuck you!
That's what we need. Yeah. Those were the days.
Now that's a
good, honest fighting.
Yeah. That's a callback to the
good
start.
Denim jackets as well.
Oh look, do you want to have a go? Come on, lad. Come on, lad.
Yeah, look at that. He's
now that's a callback to the earlier on because one of his, I think it was one of his kids. Was it the school or something? So there's a bit, there's a scene earlier on.
Is he Robbie Burns' dad?
Yes.
Because Robbie Burns gets
that's
electrocuted.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Because he says at the start, there's anything you ever need.
Yeah.
Because there's actually, but it's a bit of an odd scene that, because Jim just finds him by accident on the moor, doesn't
he?
Yeah.
He's out walking.
Yeah.
And there's an electricity pylon in the background and all that.
Carry on, lad. Fantastic.
You all right?
For the record,
it's like the fucking big boy tapping at the window. Stop it! That's not right.
It really isn't, by the way.
Michael Murray, and he's obsessed about his hair as well, isn't he, Mike Murray? Yes. Here we go.
That just about made me feel sick.
It's only a bit of television violence.
Oh, I can't. I'm having to stand back. I can't cope with it.
So the city's rioting, isn't it? As a result of all the shenanigans across the series.
Mm. Yeah, but a lot of the point being that it's been the race stuff has been whipped up by the thugs, by the goons.
That's it.
In police outfits.
Yeah. Yeah. Here we are, look.
So you can see where the budget went.
Yeah. Smashing cars?
Yeah, they are nice, aren't they?
Yeah. It's a Fiat Strada, isn't it? No, it's a Chrysler Alpine, I think.
Yep. Jesus wants me for a Talbot Sunbeam.
And why would they, what was, oh, here we are, yes, in Simon Terrell, yeah.
That's nice. It's really beautifully shot, isn't it?
Yeah. Who was the director, Craig?
Robert Young, he'd done a lot of telly. Uh-huh. He made a few films, including Fierce Creatures.
Ah.
Fierce Creatures?
Yeah. Horrendous film.
He was one of two directors
with an outlay for the co-op.
Yeah. I think, didn't John Cleese once say he had two regrets in life? One was marrying that American woman, and one was making Fierce Creatures.
Which was supposed to be the sort of inheritor to A Fish Called Wonder.
An equal, not a sequel.
I don't like A Fish Called
That's
Wonder.
Right, oh,
I like A Fish Called Wonder.
I like Fish Called Wonder.
I'm not mad on A Fish Called
Wonder. I saw the British premiere of A Fish
Called
Wonder.
Although, the best person
is a pain punter.
The best person of Fish Called Wonder is Michael Palin.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he is. He's very good in it.
I don't like Kevin Klein, you see.
Yeah, I don't understand that. I mean, I understand
Never
what you
done.
Mean. I understand
yeah.
the concept.
Yeah.
It's been had I done some research for this, I'd have gone back and seen what he'd written in his diaries about this Michael Palin. I remember him writing at length about it.
About
GBH.
I've got one of the diaries, but it's only the halfway Hollywood.
I've read them all. I love
that's good. Yeah. Well,
his diaries are great.
I just spoke to him.
Yeah, that's true. You didn't get much out of him, though, did you?
Not really.
I like to believe that Michael Palin was one of the major leading men of the 80s, given his work in things like Private Function, The Missionary.
The Missionary's a great film.
American Friends.
Time Bandits.
Time Bandits. All great. Yeah. Well, he's not really a lead in Time Bandits, but he is good.
No, but he co-wrote it as well.
Yeah. But as a lead, I mean, actually as a leading man.
Yeah.
Which
was this the first dramatic role he did?
Had he not made American Friend by this time?
No, that was 19... Oh, no, I think it might be 1990. Yeah.
Which is great. It's really great. And well, what I like about Palin is when you read the diaries, he's such an amiable character and all this sort of thing. But you get a real... I certainly, when I read it, you get a real feeling of drive. It's somebody who gets shit done.
He likes to work, he works very hard. And he's only happy when he's working.
But... but he's successful.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
yeah,
I mean, he for all the stuff, he, you know, you could read the diaries and just think, oh, he just seems to go from one thing to the other. There's somebody who's fucking making things happen.
Yeah, and there's not a lot of failures in it either.
No, that's true.
And I love his travel programmes as well. Yeah. I mean, I know they've become a bit sort of slightly old hat now, but it's time. Around the World in 80 Days was tremendous.
Oh, I loved Around the World in 80 Days. I love that.
Who was
the phone call at the start?
Who was that originally
going to
feature?
Alan Wicker.
It was Alan Wicker, wasn't it?
And do you know who else on the list?
Sid Little.
Noel Edmonds.
Wow.
Yeah.
Jeez, Around the World in 80 Days, not long enough.
There you go.
You when you come back.
Buster Merrifield.
But, yeah, Around the World in 80 Days was like real real appointment viewing. Yeah, it's just great.
Do we think that this is Bleasdale's point of view as well? This speech from Nelson?
I have no idea.
I don't know. I think it's probably a bit too conciliatory for somebody like Bleasdale.
It's a big pair of trousers he's wearing there, isn't
it? I suspect that he's writing it... this is terribly Swedish, but I suspect he's writing it as the person he would like to believe he is.
Right.
Or he would like to be.
I like,
you know, much more
two books or three.
Much more sensible and much more conciliatory. Yeah. But actually, Bleasdale would probably be on the front row.
No, he'd be in the second row.
So he went on and did Jake's Progress and he did that most thing. And then he did Oliver Twist, I seem to remember as well.
Yeah.
Mm. An adaptation of Oliver Twist. And then did he not do a thing where he sort of showcased new writers, I think? And then I can't think of...
doesn't he regularly give interviews saying the BBC won't give him any work anymore?
Yeah, he's one of those types. But it's funny how we don't really have a writer du jour anymore.
No.
For a wee while it was Jimmy McGovern.
And
then they tried to do it with that prick who... what's his name?
Paul
Is
Abbott?
It Dick? No.
They sort of...
no, him that wrote Street of Crocodiles and all that wank.
Do you even know what that is?
No, I don't know what that is. What else did he write?
What's his name? He wrote that one as well about Prince George.
Oh, fuck. Stephen Polyakov.
Yes, Polyakov.
Yeah.
Shit. He did the thing about the photo library as well.
Yeah, it's just all gash.
Yeah. Which was, it's a fictional photo library and just their photos.
But, it's sort of, we don't seem to have a well, maybe it's actually because the format doesn't exist anymore.
I think that's the reason.
You know, like in the mid-90s, mid to late 90s, I should say. Actually, late 90s, early 2000s, when ITV started to change the setup of these things.
Mm-hmm.
Because it would have big ticket dramas, but they would be stripped over 3 days.
Mm. Mm.
You know, like a sort of Saturday to Monday or like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So, which seemed really odd then, but actually now, when series... you know, like things on Netflix come out all at once, you know, it doesn't seem that odd now, but it's the death of this sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in fairness, you do get very good contemporary dramas that touch upon things and do it well. I mean, this long scene's reminding me of Line of Duty, where you have 20-minute long, you know, interrogation scenes, and certainly the last few series of that have touched upon sort of, you know, local politics, and the police, and well, the last series touches upon the Savile stuff and whatnot.
But the difference, I think, is that there was an expectation back then that there would be somewhere, whether it would be BBC or Channel 4 or even ITV, hard to believe now, that there would be a big series once a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think probably the last...
not a genre-based thing, not a precinct-based thing.
One year there will be...
a big state
somebody
of the nation,
somewhere
usually.
Will have one big drama series every year. Yeah. And 1 year it might be BBC, 1 year it might be Channel 4, might even be BBC 2.
That's a great line. When he says, when you talked about your father, you know I didn't have a father. He goes, oh yeah, I did it on purpose, money. He's not a pushover, Jim Nelson, is he?
Oh, no, not at all, no. Because you do, you know, it's easy to forget. But I mean, the reason all this is happening is because, or he's able to do all this, is because he is a stalwart of the local Labour movement.
Yeah.
That's what makes this particularly interesting, I think, is because it's not the somebody who's a political outsider falling foul of a political circle or whatever. Yeah. And it's not Labour versus a Tory.
No.
And the person who the Labour set up or the militant set up is falling foul of is a sort of woolly liberal who's actually a Tory or a liberal. They're all on the same, meant to be on the same side, and that's what makes it so, because what's really despicable is treachery. Yeah. And this is riddled with treachery.
Yeah. Especially union members betraying each other.
Which is utterly disgusting.
Despicable. Nothing lower.
Nope. And there's nothing lower than a scab.
Nope.
Well, here we are.
And she called in the D.
Get the fuck.
Right. There he is. Robert Lindsay. So, I mean, we vaguely talked about him. He'd been famous in the 80s for doing the limp. Oi! And this is before he... This isn't the greatest thing he did. That's obviously My Family.
Jesus Christ.
Or Onassis the Musical.
Yeah.
Which I believe was something worth seeing.
This is a very challenging part, though, isn't it? They gave him. Because he has to do a lot.
Okay, he's got the twitch coming back there.
Did either of you
Simon Callan
watch that Hornblower thing that ITV did? No. It's a sort of occasional series of like big ticket C.S. Forrester.
Yeah, what's his name, isn't it?
But he's not in it. Although he plays Hornblower, he's not in it very much. Like the main character is actually Robert Lindsay, who's like the captain of the show. It was a pretty fucking impressive series.
Yeah,
I mean they were very occasional because I think they were just so expensive.
Aye.
But they were a very kind of hokey, you know, naval
funnancy
and all that sort of thing. But they were you couldn't get past them.
Was he good,
were fucking impressive. Well, he's a sort of, you know, stalwart captain,
salty sea dog,
you know, firm but fair and all that. So there's not much depth to it. But they were worth fucking watching.
Mm.
We mentioned in a previous commentary, I can't remember which one. Sharp.
Yeah.
That was a sort of stalwart. That's the sort of thing you'd never fucking get ITV made now.
No.
Napoleonic Wars in the Ukraine.
So what was the last big statement drama then, do you think? So there was Our Friends in the North was 96, wasn't there? Holding On was 97.
Really,
yeah.
What was that one?
Holding on. Remember that?
What was that?
It's very good.
Yeah, it is really good. David Morrissey's in that, isn't he?
David Morrissey.
David Calder. It's about corruption.
No, I don't remember that
essentially.
One.
Oh, it's
you had
good.
State of Play in the 2000s.
Yes, that's
but
true.
But that turns
out
not to be.
Yeah. So that's like
the whole point of that is it becomes. Yeah, it's actually just a sort of quite shitty, sexual, good-looked, nobody mentioned she'd be
good-looked, it's a knife, it's not a knife, I thought he mentioned a trocadero.
And nobody said you knifed him.
No, you genuinely said nobody mentioned a knife.
I thought it was the mention
of the Trocadero that gave it away.
It's something. I thought it was a knife.
I think it was the knife at the end, but it genuinely. I remember watching it thinking, fucking seriously?
And after like 4 or 5 weeks of it being really good.
Really excellent.
Including one of the roles that made Bill Nighy a national hero.
Bill Nighy, I think you'll find is.
But he has that great bit as a newspaper editor when he phones down to the print room and goes, hello John, how are you? How were you? It's a stop.
But it was but it also made a star of Philip Glenister.
Yeah.
Who therefore got
Life on Mars
and Ashes to Ashes. Ashes to Ashes, which I think is better than Life on Mars.
I never liked it because I didn't like him coming to Canning.
No, I like.
Who I now like because of Line of Duty.
She's fantastic in Line
but
of Duty.
But I like Ashes to Ashes because the end of the second series is full on, almost like an 80s BBC fantasy.
Yeah, it does go so nuts.
So it's just so fucking mental.
Yeah, it does go nuts.
Of course, another thing that happened around the time of just after this, when we're talking about State of the Nation things.
Sorry, go on.
Is, oh, that's, what's the name?
Yeah, Jane Battersby, Danson, yeah.
Oh. Is it not long?
Battersby. Oh.
Not long after this, she's not changed. Is that?
I'm not very good at that, Sally.
Dennis Potter died.
Yeah,
just a few years after this. Oh, so you're talking about those big State of the Nation.
Did they die with him then? Because he was somebody who did deliver one a year. Now,
yeah.
They were of varying qualities.
Black
eyes.
Yeah,
black eyes. And it has to be said.
Yeah, Michael Goff.
I liked it. I've
always a documentary about his private life.
I've always actually liked the idea of a Muppet version of Black Eyes with Sam the Eagle playing Mickey Goff. Anyway.
Yeah.
Wait. The disappointing thing about Dennis Potter dying, apart from him dying, was that...
I don't think you'd get away with showing this now.
No, you wouldn't.
And he also quotes the Doctor.
Cut off my
gas. Melvin Bragging for you.
So he does.
Yeah, the blossom is blossom.
The Melvin Bragg interview is his proper epitaph because karaoke, and especially called Lazarus, are fucking shit.
Yeah.
Great music. But
I liked most of karaoke. I managed about 20 minutes of Code
Lazarus.
Lazarus
is dreadful.
Because it's written by someone who doesn't understand science fiction either.
Yeah. Karaoke is much the better of the two. But still not great.
No, it's not great.
I mean, it is no...
No,
Pennies from Heaven is an incredible
song. He's being wrestled by Count Arthur Strong.
Now, when we were talking about the...
Robin the Vipper, I think you'll find.
So when we
That's
were talking...
That's not bad, actually. I think you'll find.
When we were talking about the best dramas, best British dramas...
I'm afraid!
None of us mentioned The Singing Detective.
Well, I was...
Repetition!
I was actually going to get to that, because the... Pennies from Heaven is incredible, but Singing Detective is the controversial one, and is, I think, is actually only thought of as being better, or is a bit higher a profile because it's just seen as more controversial than the Pennies from Heaven. I think Pennies from Heaven is better.
I mean, that's who your Mark Lawson types would say.
Beardy Lawson.
They would say that's the Beardy best
Billy
Lawson drama.
It's quite odd though, isn't it? Because Pennies from Heaven is a bit of a murderer.
Yeah.
Whereas Singing Detective is really only controversial because Patrick Malahide humps his mum and he gets a stiffy.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, no, totally.
And that's it. You know, it's really weird if you think about it.
But as a drama, I think Pennies from Heaven is better.
No, I agree, yeah.
I
and
don't
also,
say that there's particular that he's, what do you call him, Harold, is particularly...
yeah, but I'm saying you think that would be more controversial.
Yes,
it's not anymore.
But it doesn't have sex and... Vaseline in it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was...
As soon as you get the Vaseline involved in the sex, that's it.
And
Dennis Potter fan?
Yeah, very much again, you know, where he goes wrong or where it's barking or where it's crap, it is all those things. But at least it was something different. Mm. At least he was always trying.
Brimstone and Treacle, that is a fucking controversial drama.
That certainly is.
But, and it's only sort of... And it was...
The devil rapes mentally...
And then brings her back to life.
Better,
But the thing about that is, it becomes less controversial just because it's older.
Mm-hmm.
And all of his controversial stuff, even then, got sort of washed away when Black Eyes came.
It has to be said that in the film of Brimstone and Treacle, which is famous, which is only good for Sting going, only wind, was it? Even when the darkest clouds are in the sky, you mustn't cry and you whatever else. Spell it as you go by.
Right,
she's lying.
She's lying.
That's good, but he's rotten in the film.
Yeah.
But the TV programme has Michael Kitchen in it.
Yeah, and he's...
Sugar and spice and quite so nice is giving a girly the right kind of whirly. Horrible.
Yeah, it's not very many dramas, even back then, who would take a fairly significant part of the last episode and put it in a flashback.
Yeah.
That's true.
Which includes the murder of a girl and her pouring acid over some hamsters.
Yeah. Yep, totally. Having butter hand.
Yeah.
And then him getting fucking leathered by the teacher that his mother fancies. Nice.
So, what about Jimmy McGovern then?
Who's that boy? Sort of, he
seems very familiar, yeah. Doesn't he?
So, what do we think of Jimmy McGovern's oeuvre?
Don't like him.
Do you not like Cracker?
I like Cracker.
It's all right.
Cracker's great.
I like Cracker's
great. I never
great,
actually
yeah.
watched it when it was on.
Brilliant. Yeah, Cracker's great. Yeah.
Well, that's Moira McFadden, isn't it?
It's right. Cracker's great.
Bastard,
and
what I loved about Cracker was...
Hillsborough's great.
I never saw that.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
But the lakes and all that.
The lakes
was fucking
yeah,
good.
It was pretty crap, yeah. But what I always loved about Cracker was that, you know, it was watched by 17 million people. Mm. And it was really quite
I wasn't
hard-hitting.
One of them.
Yeah, you weren't one of them, were you?
Yeah, no, it was pretty potent stuff.
Yeah, but really popular.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I did watch the Hillsborough-related one, and it's very impressive, except it's got Robert Carlyle in it. I don't really like Robert Carlyle.
He's very good Cracker as well.
Yeah,
that's what we're talking about.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Oh, you, so saw, really you like saw the Hillsborough-related episode?
Oh, yes, yes, sorry.
It's him that's in it, but I don't really
he's
like Robert Carlyle.
No, he's great in it. Oh, he's great in that. It's a great, great... series Cracker.
The
and they even had the even and it was particularly good is the fact that they kill off Eccles.
They do.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a great Cracker. So I'm trying to remember what it's called.
This is my last testament.
Is it called Men Should Wait? It's the one with the serial rapist, and he rapes a woman and throws him in the swimming pool, and they bring him in to interview him, and he's got this line where they're saying to him, "Did you do this?" And he says, "I never raped no one in my lifetime." Which you just think it's like as a kind of understanding how people actually speak. It's such a fucking.
I did. Line. I did like the bit when Albie and Fitz are in the room together, and he's going LIVEPOOL.
And
a cold change that's going soul tag. That's the Adelphi.
There's the Adelphi.
Adelphi. Yeah.
Do you remember the series?
Just shut up and cook, will ya?
That was it. That was.
I love that
series. Stunning programme. That's about 20 years
just
ago.
Just cook, will you?
The hotel?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's fucking great. And what I loved about the hotel is that the only competent person in that whole setup was the lassie who was the head of reception. And when she got pregnant and went on maternity, the last bit of organisation fell apart.
There was an amazing scene.
What's the type? Sorry,
it's,
I can't remember
it's
what's on the
somewhat.
Tape.
It's the real story, isn't it?
Yeah.
The scene. I remember in the hotel. There's a scene when someone's complaining about the havoc at breakfast because it's just all broken down. And a very reasonable person goes to the reception and says, "It's a disaster. We can't get breakfast." And the person's going, "Well, I just don't recognise what you're saying." It's almost that like you can't argue with it.
Yeah,
no,
where have we
all
heard
right,
that?
Okay, yeah, I know. I don't understand that. I don't see it.
I'm totally relaxed about that.
I don't understand what you're saying. So what else was he in again? Because he's very...
He's in... well, he's in quite a lot of Bleastar stuff, wasn't he? He's in Scully. In fact, he's Scully, isn't he?
God, Scully.
But what I quite like
was,
is the
was
little...
Was he the one that was investigating the UFOs, then?
Yes, that's right.
The little... I like the little...
No, she didn't invest... When she was by herself, she didn't investigate anything.
But he's a very thin man, but he looks fat as fuck in those trousers.
Hang on, you're missing the one of the little... the ratting bit that he does here, because he needs rid of them.
Oh,
so he dumps them in
right.
The
yeah with these
in
guys.
The ghetto.
Says here they are.
Yep.
Yeah.
And when he leaves at the end, and after doing all that scam, alright, Murray, and at the end, he talks with a very posh accent.
The way they drink their
beer.
Right.
Yeah.
This is an Nigerian provocative.
Yes. Yeah. I love the noisy way they drink their beer.
Yeah.
They are so.
That's your head. Is he on the gang?
No.
On the right.
No.
That's Jenna Butler.
No.
Yeah, just drink beer now.
Just let me out with the buds.
He
didn't
just
fuck
them up. Sure, he's not a McGann.
Which one?
The one on the right.
He's not a
McGann. Which
McGann?
Is he not a minor? Just a minor McGann.
Minor McGann. McGann minor.
He's not a McGann.
Fred McGann.
Doesn't he have a brother in this as well? His character. Wow, Scully. I'm sure he does. Who's out and out posh? Here we are. Look.
It's like a big audio dynamite video.
But yes, you're right to point out
it's
that the treachery is...
Yeah, no. That's it.
Here we go again.
Here we go again.
Now, the thing about that is, would you not, if you were those guys, go, well, you've just been driving them.
Yeah.
So who the hell are you? But I suppose they recognise them and then just go, right.
Mm. Yep. And that's the end of them.
Yeah.
That's me off phone now.
I've got quite the fat ass for a skinny bloke.
Now he takes his time to watch.
Yep. Enjoying his handiwork.
Because he is proper evil.
That's basically just...
Yeah, look at that.
Yeah.
Proper evil.
That's just a normal night out in Liverpool.
That's the front of the Grafton.
What are you doing for me, mate? No.
So, did we come to a conclusion if there are any dramatists around now?
Well, today,
yeah.
Guy few in the raw deed, son. That's so many.
Is it because
Russell T. Davis?
Well, I was going to say, I suspect that ITV thought for a while that Chris Chibnall was with Broadchurch.
Oh,
that went fucking wrong very quickly. One.
But yeah. You can see how that they were building that up to be a big kind of State of the Nation type series.
Well, I think, I was going to say earlier, I think actually the last pretty much...
Dafty Penn, hasn't she?
Daft Rucksack. I think actually...
Daft Rucksack.
One of the...
From the Cold Land.
I think one of the... Probably the last big ticket drama. Because, what do you call it? Oh, Christ, I keep wanting to call it Shadowling. The one that you mentioned earlier, the
Line of Duty.
Mm. It's not, although it's graduating to BBC One now.
Yeah,
it's not exactly big.
Well, it's still a precinct drama.
Yeah. It's just a superior one.
Yeah,
it's a superior one.
So and it's very probably the last bringing in things that have happened. So, not really got anything to say about them.
So probably the last big ticket appointment viewing drama probably was Broadchurch. Yeah,
I think so.
Series one,
which I never saw. I only saw the start of series two.
Series two,
terrible. Because
remember you going,
I watched it with and saying, "What the fuck was that?" Then?
I remember you going on and on about Broadchurch. So I watched it all and I was like, "Oh no, this is great." I mean, it was really great.
Series one is
great. It's because David Tennant, you know, is great because he's not playing the Doctor.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
And then
it's good in Fright Night.
First episode of series two, you're like, "What the fuck happened here?"
Well, series two also commits that terrible crime of it makes series one in retrospect seem a lot worse, I think. I don't really have the appetite to watch series one again because of how bad series two is.
I watched all the series two. I watched the first series. I'm not fucking wasting any more of my life in this.
It was really poor. Really disappointing. And of course, they're doing series three. Poor church.
Fucking seriously?
Yeah. And did you know that the...
Have they wrapped up the sort of the murder thing yet?
I'm not... Yes, they sort of have, but it's very... And morally, it's also very weird because what happens is he gets away with having murdered the little boy.
Who's he? The dad guy.
Yeah. And so then actually...
Spoilers.
So the conclusion at the end is this whole thing where the community all come together who've all sort of been battling with each other. And decide that they're going to ostracise him and banish him. So he leaves, they're all happy. And you think, well, that's great. You just sent a paedophile off to another town and at least you knew he was a paedophile.
Yeah. No.
And is that why he was doing it? Is that why he killed him? Because he was a paedophile?
Yes, pretty much, yes. Uh-huh.
That's quite a pair of trousers Mr. Mulville's wearing there.
It's 1991.
They've got a jaunty check on them.
Here we go.
My hair was like that.
And... something else I wanted to say about Line of Duty
is that
when they started writing the last episode of the most recent series,
mm-hmm.
the first draft was just one long scene, which was an interpretation.
Say that again?
When Jed Mercurio started writing the last episode
mm-hmm.
of Series 3, his initial intention was it was just going to be one long interpretation.
He's not seen it yet, so don't give anything more away.
Can I give away the fact that as a series,
so
it's
this
good,
is, sorry,
bad, good and bad?
Hang on. This is the big reveal.
Here we are.
So he didn't actually kill her. She killed herself.
This is the reveal
Barbara
that Lindsay Duncan is not
Eileen
Critchley.
Barbara is... So someone's been pretending to be Eileen Critchley
mm-hmm.
and he's got close to this lady Barbara.
But he thought he'd killed her.
No, Barbara is Eileen Critchley's sister.
Yeah.
So
did he kill the girl?
Yeah, she did.
Yeah,
die.
But she's been convincing him that she is Eileen Critchley and that he didn't kill her.
No, I thought he just said she killed herself with a scarf at college.
Oh, yes, I think you're right.
Oh,
yeah.
So he didn't actually kill her after all.
The point remains, though, that the whole point of the island, of the Lindsay Duncan character, is she's there to fuck him up.
Yeah. But she goes...
I love you very much indeed. I'm in love with you.
He's fantastic as well.
Michael Murray. Curry. I love a curry.
He's fantastic in this. And did he not play the original Crichton in Red Dwarf as well? Before Robert Llewellyn played him.
Oh, you know, Red Dwarf's a thing that I just never got into. I love the first series. I remember the first series, like, this is great. And then I maybe watched the second series. And then I didn't watch it for a while. And then you came back and suddenly Norman Lovett wasn't in it and Robert Llewellyn was. And they weren't on Red Dwarf anymore. Yeah. Like, what the fuck has happened? Never.
See, she killed herself. Yeah, I'm seeing I just parted company with it quite quickly.
Oh, yes, because the headmaster did save
the girl.
Right.
Yes, that's right. But so what he's discovered is that Barbara, who he thinks is his new sister. Love, is Barbara Critchley. Yeah. Right. And she's been planted there to screw his head.
So, which has worked.
Yes, except that she has actually decided that
she does love him. Yeah.
My girl.
I like Lindsay Duncan.
Yeah, she's good. She's very good in this. Everyone's very good in this.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I've not seen Julie Wallace so far.
No, that's right. She doesn't have a big role in this, though.
No, she. Her role is basically to be explain something of why he's fucked up, and to be the, you know, she's sort of pampered by him and sent to the seaside, and his driver has to look after her and all that.
Well, his driver's his brother, isn't it?
Philip Whitchurch, and Sharp.
Yeah.
So what have you meant?
It's a great sight when he takes him out and leaves him at the side of the road, and then another guy sees the bus driver comes along, and he tells him he's dirty den, and he's filming a scene from a
bus. Yes, that's right.
And he's got a real dirty. He's got all dirty. Are you just filming dirty?
Dirty.
Okay.
Don't be dirty. Centres of excellence.
So what do you think Bleasdale's saying about...
See, this is the thing I wonder where they put it next when he goes all posh.
Yeah. What is Bleasdale saying about the police force to the GBH?
They're all cunts.
Do you think...
Well, yeah,
I mean... Do you think it's sort of shaped by Hillsborough and...
I think it's shaped just by... Not just by Hillsborough, but also by the miners' strike and Orgreave.
Yeah.
And probably also in a weird... That's an interesting.
Yeah,
it's like Batman at the end of Batman.
That being hokey.
But in an interesting drama affecting life way, by some things like Edge of Darkness, because it does change people's nice things like that. Change. Oh, nice big Granada. It does change people's perceptions of things. And the opinion of the police at the time was pretty low.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that they were up to all sorts. Rightly
so. Oh, here we go. This is brother and his mum, isn't it?
It's his brother's driver, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Philip Whitchurch. That's a nice looking sofa that I like that.
Yep.
Oh, what's going on there? Because wasn't his dad like a proper socialist or something?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's why he's got his sort of standing in the party.
Yeah.
You couldn't make this now. I mean, a story like this. I don't mean the drama. You couldn't make the drama anyway.
No.
But I mean, you could make a story like this now.
The politics, the
language is all different,
as well, isn't it? Yeah.
And did Derek
the notion of generations in the same party and being a big name in a party,
and to be a powerful politician now? Certainly, you could not be a municipal politician and have this profile. So you'd have to be some sort of, you know. Maybe you could get away with being like the mayor of London or something, but you basically have to be an MP, which means you'd have to be aspirational and rich.
It would also be very glossy, fast moving. You know, there wouldn't be any of the sort of kind of grubbiness of it, really.
Yeah, not quite. I know. So when we get into talking about drama of the time, this kicked off. I think pretty much kicked off Channel 4's reputation for having these big dramas.
So the things like Chamomile Lawn.
Chamomile Lawn was the thing that occurred to me.
And then was that in the Land of Plenty? Was that
previous to this? You had a very British coup.
Very British coup. Yeah.
Well, which is great.
So that's 1989, isn't it? For a British coup.
Yeah.
It's kind of more of a not a one-off, but I mean, it's a very
What
is it? It's only like three parts.
Three parts. Yeah.
So it was more like a sort of, you know, it wasn't like a series. But I take your point, but there's also, then there was things like Politician's Wife.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. I quite liked that.
Yeah, it was quite good.
It's okay.
Yeah.
The sequel, The Politician's Husband, was dreadful.
Yeah.
It also has an extraordinarily sort of ill-judged scene of David Tennant either having anal sex with or anally raping his wife. It's never made entirely clear. Yeah. And it's fairly unpleasant, brutal, yeah. actually. And his sex face is quite upsetting. You don't want to see the Doctor's sex face.
No.
Was The Politician's Wife by Paula Mill?
Yes. Yeah. I think she wrote both, I think, actually. Yeah. Okay. But The Politician's Wife was great.
Yeah, it was okay. Juliet Stevenson, is that right?
Yeah. And who played the husband?
Trevor Eve.
Oh, the ghastly Trevor Eve. Yeah. Oh, I don't like Trevor Eve. Do you remember him in that one, Sense of Guilt?
Oh, yeah.
Leo, I love you.
There were Trevor Eve started appearing in lots of things for a while, the highest paid actor in Britain.
What's he?
Yeah.
Because he was in, and there was things like... thing with the death people.
What?
It's all right. I just remember something Trevor Eve was in, that was all.
What? You can't have a private joke.
And then there was things like... what was that one... Was it called the... Not the. It wasn't called like The Bachelors, but it's called something like The Bachelor Club or something. Don Warrington was in it as well.
Yeah. Oh,
suddenly you just like, oh no, it's Philip fucking somebody.
Yeah.
And do you remember as well, there was a sudden spate of dramas where Keith Barron was fucking people.
Oh, like, Take Me Home.
Take Me Home. That was good drama.
Yeah, so but
Maggie G.
Yeah,
in fact, he's in Keith Holding Barron's On as well, isn't he?
He is in Holding On.
And extremely good at that. Now, did Derek Hatton ever...
What did you say Holding On was about again?
Holding On, it sort of has lots of separate storylines about people living in a big city, but then they all sort of come together, and it's
that's
about
what Keith Barron gets. Yeah.
But he murders... he's a minicab driver in that, isn't he?
Isn't he? Played, there was a spate of things.
He was a minicab driver
where he just keeps fucking everybody.
So his storyline Holding On is his wife doesn't give a shit about him. She's having an affair with the next door neighbour. Mm. And then he's like a repressed man. And then he's giving someone a ride in the minicab, and the guy's rude to him. And he kills him, doesn't he? Yeah. And then the wife suddenly loves him. She finds him sexually.
She's sadly got fucking interest in
now. Let me ask again, has Derek Hatton ever commented on GBH?
It's things great, you know. He is a dick.
Because it is so clearly based on
that. Was the joke, it was called by Hatton.
Yeah.
Right, so but has he ever passed comment on it?
Not to me personally, no.
Not like Michael has to me.
He said, oh no, you know, I like a mech, I love a mech, I do, you know, hey.
what does Derek Hatton do?
He's got a public relations company in Liverpool, yeah.
And he was a DJ for a while, wasn't he? Did he do some DJ, I think?
DJ. Hey. The DJ do 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 do.
I think we're getting close to the end now, aren't we?
Yeah. It's a very light dashboard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So other things, dramas that were more like series, which were quite big in the sort of 90s and early 2000s, was Clocking Off.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah. The woman that was in Clocking Off is the one that I thought she was.
That was kind of anthology, wasn't it?
More? Yeah, sorry?
The woman in Clocking Off was the one that I thought she was.
Yeah.
Wasn't Clocking Off, wasn't that Jimmy McGovern?
No, it was not Paul Abbott.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a good programme.
I tell you one that I loved. That didn't really get
Even despite having Keith Allen in it, it was a good programme.
That didn't well, that's like Very Rich Crew.
Yeah.
That didn't get the attention that deserved, I don't think, was the brilliant Common as Muck.
Oh yes.
Oh yeah.
Which I absolutely
loved. That was Iwa Wiwa,
and Tim Healy, and Roy Hudd.
Yeah, that was really good.
Really great. I loved that series.
Like Vauxhall Senator there.
Yeah. Here he goes off to the police.
The only time I ever saw a Vauxhall Senator in the street was when I used to go to a school on the south side, and the council offices were next to it. East Reading council offices. And they're quite a petite council office because it's a small area. And there was always a Vauxhall Senator party that must have been the leader of the council or something. And it was a fucking beast of a machine.
Huge thing.
It's a car that trundled.
Absolutely, yeah.
like a tanker. It takes 2 miles to slow down and turn. Do we think that the last episode of GBH is anything other than tying up the ends, or does it develop quite anything else? Because there's, I think, there's a difference in some series where, you know, it progresses right up to the last minute, and then there's a
There's a definite feeling that we've had a few endings by now. Yeah,
this is a shape of proper ending.
You think it is?
I think this is a good, I think this is good, and I think the fact that it isn't a case of there's more stuff. Oh, there's 5 minutes. Let's finish.
Now, do we? When would
the end starts from the beginning of the episode?
Yeah. What do we prefer?
I think it depends on the nature of what you're trying to do. Because the structure of this is so good, and the dialogue and the characterization of this is so good, it feels like this is the right way to go with this. Because you're invested in everything that's going on. So you don't, and you want to get the resolution and understand why is he like the way that he is.
Aye, because I have to say I prefer that because certainly if you're invested in a series that's 6 or 7 episodes long, you want more than a 5 minute turnaround at the end.
Yeah.
You want a bit of a run-in.
Yes.
You know, even if it's just the last half of it, you want to savour it a bit because you've invested quite a lot of time in it.
Yeah.
Do you know, I kind of feel that in a way...
Do you ever find out why they're after them? Why they hated them so much, Eileen and Barbara?
Because she was basically a psychopath and she just used to pick on him, and then she sort of indoctrinated Barbara. So I was going to say, I kind of feel like in a way we've split these types of dramas into two things, which is you get the big high budget stuff like The Night Porter, which has the scope.
The Night Manager. The Night Porter is something else entirely.
Yes, it is.
The Night Manager, and then you've got things like Happy Valley, which is then sort of trying to get more into the
politics. Happy Valley?
I've never seen it.
Oh, Happy Valley, it's excellent. Sarah Lancashire. It's good. But it's a bit about corruption, but it's a far more concentrated and small scale.
Right.
Whereas what this is doing is it's sort of both of those things. And in a way, I don't think you get big dramas.
As I control.
There you go, look. The big dramas are all kind of like blockbusters now, in a way, aren't they? And I think that this isn't a blockbuster in that sense.
They try to do other things that are not quite all big blockbusters. I'm not sure that's what people want anymore. They did that series a couple of years ago. Remember about the people that won the lottery? The Syndicate.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then
was that Jimmy McGovern as well?
I don't know. So there was like a... No, I don't think it was. It might have been, but it didn't seem like it. In any case, so there was like... Now, what was the conceit of that? Because I watched a few of them. I quite enjoyed them. But there was like a series where it was from one perspective, then another perspective. There was somebody who didn't get their share. And it was much more sort of in terms of a story. It was just about a group of people. And, you know, there's nothing macro and political about that.
So in which category would you put Citizen Kane?
Shit comedy.
We haven't said anything about music in GBH.
How about it?
It's fantastic.
It's by Elvis Costello.
Yeah.
Before he became unspeakably boring. It's actually around the time he became unspeakably boring, actually.
Beautiful.
So he married that jazz singer woman and then started saying, I'll never listen to classical music anymore. And I'm going to write a symphony. All good.
Because doesn't this end with some jazz, I think? I seem to remember.
Here we go. Now, what was that series you said, the one with the crosswords? The Alan Plater one?
Gulliver's Travels.
Gulliver's Travels. Now, that leads us into the person who's often missed as one of the greatest playwrights of all time, in amongst all the Dennis Potters and your McGoverns and all that, which is Alan Plater.
Alan Plater, fantastic.
Alan Plater, when you look at what he actually produced, it's an astounding body of work. You know, the Beiderbecke.
They're amazing.
Which are all great. As you say, all those travels.
And
great.
The great thing about Beiderbecke is he basically pulls off the same trick 3 times in a row.
Absolutely.
It still works.
But you don't care because actually it's a proper giving the audience what they want.
Yeah.
Which is, we love these characters, we love the atmosphere, we love the setup. Let's just have some more. Let's say there's some more. And there's another one.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's got Dudley Sutton in it as well.
Yeah, so you have Land of Green Ginger and all that. I mean, just fucking
He amazing. Also, and I think we've talked about this once before,
And the screenplay for Juggernaut.
The screenplay for Juggernaut, which is fantastic.
Andrew Schofield, of course, yeah.
Who's that?
He was the guy who we were talking about who was pretending to be the working class.
Yeah.
As a prop guy. Tom Jordan. There's just such phenomenal talent in that.
There's a great cast. Arthur Spreckley, the great Arthur Spreckley.
Philip Whitchurch and Julie Walters. Now, he also wrote the that great Les Dawson thing. Now, what was it called? Was it called the Loner?
Well, I don't know that.
It was a one-off, and what it was he had this idea, him and Les Dawson had this idea, and it was about a man who lived in the Yorkshire Dales and would just come down to the down to the town or the village and have a sort of adventure and go back. Mm. And it's really, really lovely. Uh-huh. And he just goes into a bar.
I don't know that one.
He just goes into a bar and sits in a pub and sits and talks to this woman, and it's a sort of brief encounter kind of thing, except she doesn't want to know. Then he just leaves. It's lovely
thing about all of his travels is he's basically... all the things he loves are in it. He's a crossword loving, licorice also eating, Guardian reading, just quite funny, smart, shambolic guy with Alan Bates. He wasn't happy with Alan Bates being in it.
Really?
He wanted it to be Tom Courtney.
No, okay.
He prefers.
Alan Bates was great in it.
Yeah, and the lovely Sinead Cusack.
Here's the thing, I can never remember the name of it. I remember it being a great series. Mm-hmm. Now, it was Alan Bates. And it must have been... must have been late 90s maybe, I really can't remember. It was Alan Bates, and he's a playwright, and he writes this play which is a big hit, sort of. Well, it's not a big hit, but it's a sort of hit.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to go on tour because they're doing a tour of it in America, and his nemesis is a playwright called Hector something, who's a massive big hit.
Uh-huh.
Who writes huge plays, who's played by Richard Wilson.
I don't know, that sounds great.
I must look up. It's really
brilliant. Is he like Ray Bloody Purchase?
No, and he goes...
Damn you, Ray Bloody Purchase!
He goes to America on this tour.
That's it.
And, superb stuff. He goes to America on this tour, and the episode I remember specifically was... He's got little tropes like he's really lonely, and he's always trying to hire prostitutes just so he can have a cuddle. He just wants to lie in bed and have a cuddle, and they all think that's really fucking weird. And there's a great episode where he's in California or something. He goes to like a young actor's workshop, and the director's starting doing all these things about your motivation and all this, and he's sitting going, "I'll just read the bloody words," or whatever. And he thinks the actors are all on his side, and then it turns out that they've all gone to the director to get him thrown out because they want to talk about the standards. If anybody remembers it, get in touch, because I can't remember what it was.
Someone undoubtedly will.
I absolutely loved it. So there we are.
So 25 years on, GBH. I think it still stands up.
Oh, I think it still stands
up. I'm surprised by how much of it came back to me watching it again there.
But the politics also feels like it's not massively archaic in a weird way.
From a perspective, that's what I was about to say.
I think anybody basically under 30... just wouldn't have a fucking clue.
But you understand.
I mean, you would understand
treachery.
I think you would
say earlier on.
I think you would have to appreciate, unless you were a cunt, you'd have to appreciate. You'd have to appreciate. I think you would have to be. The performances and the structure and the pacing and the atmosphere and the
dialogue.
That. You'd have to think it was great, but I don't think it would mean very much to
you. No, that's true.
I can't see that.
Why would it mean so much to him to go to the Labour Club and speak there? Mm-hmm. Why would they want to reclaim it? Why would they be fighting for it?
Why are they making such a fuss
about
it? What, you know, for generations that don't even know what unions are, God love them, you know, and why would it? Why would they be bothering with this city? And why does that matter? Mm. You know, and it's just that I think actually that would seem quite archaic to them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I have to say, I think Edge of Darkness nudges ahead of it. Because I think the way Edge of Darkness is set up, it still would have the resonance.
Yeah.
Because nuclear power and, you know, plutonium and things, these are still issues.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's just in the sense that anybody could watch that, and unless they are a cunt, would still think it's great. That's why I think it just nudges ahead.
Seconded.
What do you think, Jack?
Well, I don't know.
Anyway, that was GBH.
I still think it's fantastic, and I still.
Oh, no one's saying it's not. Come on.
I find it difficult to say that Prince of Darkness is better.
Oh, is it?
Because they're both fucking brilliant.
They are both amazing. Yeah.
And in fact, they did so well. You know what we should have to celebrate it? Champagne!
And then maybe
Kinkamilligan.
With Camilla Batmangella.
And some Persian.
Yay!
And that's the end of that day. Don't it's wicked.
Bye.